you're down and troubled and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right.
So have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right. Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide blog talk radio network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you, and I'm going to guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds so nasty, doesn't it? Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today, so stay tuned. Bobby Carducci, author of Confessions of an Imperfect Caregiver, the true story of the 7 years she spent as an in-home caregiver to her mentally and physically ill father-in-law, Roger. So you do not want to miss this interview. As I said, I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial. Okay, that's three. But they are also prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, come on, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask? And the reason they tell you that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch! Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that is to go through the grief process. You can't go around it, you can't go over it, you can't go under it. You got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcast, my books, my videos, my blog. I know what you're thinking. It sounds like it's all about me, but no, it's not. It's actually all about you. So just go to my website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, or the shortcut of just CaregiversCaregiver.com. Now, when you go to my website, you will want to take my short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? And guess what? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free link to my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. It's about my amazing wife's story, okay, and mine too, that is still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So please don't miss out on this very informative quiz that will assess where you are in the burnout process. And the best part is you get my book absolutely free just for doing that. Now, Amazon is still selling it for almost 10 bucks, so it's a great value. Okay, now I would like to take this moment to thank my guest a couple of weeks ago because I was actually on vacation and did not do a show for 2 weeks. And we went to Alaska on a cruise ship, and it was wonderful. I highly recommend it to anyone who can do it. Anyway, that former actor, director, teacher turned caregiver, best-selling author Donna Thompson, she redefines the good life for caregivers. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest now. Welcome to the show, Bobby.
Thank you for having me.
The joy is ours. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all of the introduction stuff for our first-time listeners. Bobby, thanks again for allowing me to interview you. I really appreciate it if you would begin telling us a little bit about yourself. Just who is Bobby Carducci?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, I'm a wife and a mother and a grandmother. I have a mother of four, grandmother of eight. I can't believe that that I've reached that point in my life. I'm a writer by profession, and I teach writing workshops to young people and at the local senior center, and I'm just having a great time. I grew up in Binghamton, New York, spent some time in Owego, so I'm a bit of a city girl and a country girl at the same time. Living in Northern Virginia now with my husband, Mike, who is my biggest supporter and the absolute love of my life.
Oh, how sweet. You and I have a couple of things in common. Number one, I'm also from New York, Brooklyn. I also attend the senior center, even though I'm barely old enough to be a senior. I sing for them every Tuesdays during the lunch hour. the standards and stuff like that. And I like to tell people that they let me do it because half of them are deaf and can't even hear me, and no one's throwing fruit at me yet, so I must be doing an okay job. So let me ask you some questions. You call yourself the imperfect caregiver. Now, that's a curious title. Where did that come from?
It came from my experience. One thing that I learned in doing this, that there's no right way to do it, especially for me. You know, sometimes I would try and fail and try again. I ended up calling it creative problem solving on the run, because what worked one day might not work the next. And just when I thought I had a handle on it, something else would happen. And also because I doubted myself a lot during the process. And
really?
A lot of times people would say to me, "You must be a saint to do this." And I would tell them, "No, I'm no saint," and my father-in-law would be the first to agree with me.
Yes, I've been accused of being a saint, too. They just don't understand how imperfect we are, do they?
Absolutely not.
So you're a self-admitted imperfect person, and, you know, a lot of caregivers have this flaw. You know what that flaw is? They're perfectionists. They want everything to be perfect. They want it all to be just right, and they're just setting themselves up for failure, aren't they?
Yes, and I also had this, I guess it was an arrogance or an ignorance in thinking that when he came to live with us, that in my care, everything would go exactly the way I hoped it would, and, you know, he would improve, and everything would be wonderful. And, of course, that didn't happen.
Wow. So what are the circumstances that that you allowed your father-in-law to move in with you? Because that's a big step, isn't it?
I suppose that it is, but it, you know, I come from a long line of family caregivers, of individuals in our family who have cared for one another at one time or another. And my husband and I were just at the point where we were starting to enjoy our empty nest, and we were building a house in Northern Virginia. But one of the things that we talked about was the fact that before too long, one or maybe more than one of our parents was going to need care. And we actually talked to the builder about what we could do to make it easy for someone who needed care, who might come into our home later on. What we didn't understand was how quickly that was going to happen. And we certainly didn't expect it to be Roger. We expected it to be one of our mothers. And before the house was even finished, both my mother and my husband's mother had passed away within 9 weeks of each other.
Oh my.
And one of the first things people said was, "What's going to happen to Roger?" And we already knew the answer to that.
Now, what are Roger's special problems?
When he came to us, he had some open heart surgery. He had some COPD. He had some behavior issues that concerned people. He wasn't, for many years, he wasn't able to work. He couldn't drive. But we weren't exactly sure what was wrong with him until we got his medical records from the VA hospital where he had been treated for many years. And that's when we discovered that he was schizophrenic and had been since his early 20s. Reading that told me this was going to be a lot bigger than I had originally thought. And at that time, I did two things. One, I took a class to become a medical assistant because I wanted to be prepared to speak to his doctors intelligently and understand what was happening to him. And should the time come when he would need shots or something like that, I wanted to be able to do it. The other thing I did was I started listening to Italian language tapes because that was his native tongue, and I thought perhaps there might come a time when he would revert back to that, and I wanted to be able to ask him if he was hungry or in pain or if he needed, you know, just basic things. Those were the first steps that I took once I realized that I was in for more than I originally thought.
Well, that's smart. So how did it go? I mean, how bad was it having someone with schizophrenia as a care receiver?
When the schizophrenia was controlled, when he was on his medication, it was fine. Mm-hmm. Schizophrenics are typically extremely introverted people who just want to be left alone. You know, they're not the monsters and the knife-wielding people that we see in the movies and on TV. The problem with that is they very often end up either homeless or in jail because they don't take their medications and their behavior becomes quite dangerous to them, to themselves more than to anybody else. There did come a time shortly after he lived with us where he was not taking his medication, but I didn't recognize the symptoms and neither did my husband, and he did have a psychotic break and end up in the hospital for 8 weeks in the psychiatric ward.
Wow.
Once that happened, though, then I took control of his medications, and those antipsychotic drugs, I was able to crush them and put them in applesauce and make sure that he could never do that again. That caused some problems between him and I because he immediately wanted control of those meds back, and I could never give it to him again.
Right.
So he resented that.
Wow. So you're no longer a caregiver now, right? So what
no,
do you do?
What
do you do in the caregiving field?
I call myself a caregiver advocate. I write about my experience as a caregiver. I speak to caregiver support groups and civic groups. Having been a caregiver for someone with serious mental and physical illnesses, I know how hard it is and the toll that it takes on caregivers, both physically and mentally. I mean, it's often extremely isolating. Many can't leave the person in the care alone, even for a few minutes. That happened in our situation. Friends back away, family members disengaged. I felt like no one understood what it was like, and now I hear that from other caregivers. So when I write about it, it's not so much to give advice, but it's to share my experiences, tell it like it is, and let caregivers know that they are not alone, that I do understand. And I also write to provide a window into the real world of caregiving for family members and friends of caregivers, so they can see what it's really like without feeling that they're somehow being accused of being neglectful or not understanding. If they're reading my situation and not having the individual caregiver say, look what's happening here, I think that might help also.
Yeah. So having Roger there, it had to be a stress on your marriage. How did Roger's behavior react to your relationship with your husband? Because a lot of times caregivers allow their duties to affect not only their own personal health, but their relationships, typically with their spouse as well.
For most of the time we were okay. Towards the end, when it became more and more demanding on me and more stressful, when I wasn't sleeping at night because he wasn't sleeping at night and that kind of thing, I have to admit that I sometimes felt resentful because my husband got to go to work and talk to adults, reasonable people, go to lunch with other people, you know, get away from the house. And on the weekends, sometimes, you know, he's out running errands, and again, I'm home doing what I always did, dealing with what I felt was really the hard stuff. So we did have some arguments, but for the most part, I have to say that my husband was extremely supportive, and he felt a great deal of guilt because I had given up my job and, you know, was doing the hard part, caring for his father, and he often felt guilty about that. And my response was only, it's not my father-in-law, it's my family, and family takes care of family. And that was kind of bred into me, so.
Now that you're so smart and you know what you know now, if you had to do it all over again, would there be a point in time where you maybe should have considered a facility so that it wouldn't have had such a negative impact on you and your health and your relationship? Is that an option?
It was very much an option for us all along. We were fortunate in having that resource because my father-in-law was initially diagnosed with schizophrenia when he was serving in the military. And at that time, back in 1947, people with that diagnosis were given 100% service-related disability. So
really?
Through the VA hospital, he had access to so many resources, and we could have admitted him to the hospital at any time. we considered it a couple of times, but the reason that we didn't was his behavior in itself. When he was admitted to the hospital for whatever reason, he would do everything he could to hide his symptoms, and he would tell the doctors and the nurses, go take care of the sick people, I can take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so busy and overburdened. If you have somebody who's presenting themselves as not needing you, they are going to do that. So we felt that it was life-threatening for him to be admitted to a care facility. But I do tell other caregivers now, not everybody can do this, not everybody should do this, and if you're making that decision to put the person in your care into a facility, it's not because that you've given up on them and that you're not going to be there for them. It's because you're strong enough to make the hard decisions.
Yeah, so right. So right, so many people maybe made promises, or maybe the care receiver says, promise me you'll never put me in a nursing home, and they'll blindly make this promise, not realizing that if they don't, they're going to kill themselves because they just can't keep doing what they're doing. And so what would you say to those people who maybe have made some rash promises or maybe are tempted to make those kinds of promises? How can they get out of it and still not be riddled with guilt?
The sentiment behind the promise is, I'm going to make sure that you get the best possible care.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you're dealing with illness, they worsen to such a degree that you turn to other ways to deal with it. And that's exactly what they're doing. It doesn't mean that you're going to abandon them. You're probably going to go and visit, if not daily, as often as possible, make sure that they get the best possible
mm-hmm.
care. Just be open to the resources that are available. You know, I've mentioned that I come from a long line of family caregivers, but not everybody in my family is up to it.
Right.
I had a cousin who brought her mother in to live with her when she needed care and said, you know, I did not sign up for this. I can't
mm-hmm.
do this. Her daughter, my aunt's granddaughter, was a natural.
Yeah.
And so she
right.
stepped in and they did it together. So I don't think that there's any one answer for caregivers. Sometimes being in a care facility is the best decision for the person that you love so much. And that's the hard decision, giving up what you thought you promised.
Right.
And just remember the sentiment behind that promise. I'm going to see to it that you get the best possible care. And if that means being in a facility, then that's what you do.
Yeah, that's great advice. You may have already touched on some of these, but what are some of the hardest things that caregivers tell you that they're dealing with?
Isolation, I think, is one of the big things, the feeling that you're absolutely alone in this. Very often, say if in my situation, I left my corporate job to stay home. In 24 hours a day, I dealt with caring for Roger. I had very little outside interaction anymore. That was a big change for me, and that often happens. Also, advice from people who have no idea what's happening with the person in care. A family member might come in maybe once a month or every 3 months and start offering advice to the caregiver based on what they see. And so often the person in care puts on their best face when someone else is in the house. And they might even, if they have dementia, like my father-in-law eventually developed, and Parkinson's disease and a number of other things going on, start telling visitors in the house, as he did, she doesn't feed me, she's controlling me, she's holding me prisoner.
Yeah.
And people don't know. Sometimes they begin to believe that.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's amazing how some people, I know my mother has dementia and my wife, you know, is recovering from stroke that she had 19 years ago. She's nonverbal, has aphasia and paralyzed on the right side. The people who visit my mother, you know, rarely say, hey, I don't know what you're talking about. We had a great conversation. She's just fine.
Exactly.
You know? What's the problem? But they don't understand that, you know, she was having a good moment. And those moments don't last. Well, we're going to take a break. You're doing a great job on this interview. And don't go away. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Okay, I'll wait right here.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassan.
And we're back with Bobby Carducci, the imperfect caregiver. Of course, we're all imperfect caregivers, aren't we? Hey, Bobby, we touched on friends and family and their opinions and this and that. Let's get into that a little more. What do friends and family members need to know in order to help us caregivers?
I think they need to understand when caregivers speak about how difficult the situation is that they understand that they're not exaggerating. As we mentioned, those in care often hide symptoms from family members and their doctors. Mm-hmm. They often say things that aren't true. They believe them to be true. The most important thing I think they need to know is caregiving is hard. It's probably one of the hardest things anybody is ever going to do. And caregivers often hear the same advice. Some of it you provide. Take time for yourself. Get enough rest. Mm-hmm. Eat right. Exercise. All of those things. And very often caregivers know that's what they're supposed to do, but they don't know how to do it. They don't know where to find the time or the resources, or they reach out for help, and people who were full of good intentions at the beginning are too busy. So it gets frustrating to hear that. I would love it if a family member or a friend came in and said, I know you need to get enough rest. Let me come by in the afternoon on Thursday next week so you can take a nap.
Yeah.
Or, I know that you used to go to the gym all the time. What day do you go there? Let me come in so you can do that. So rather than just telling them what to do, is somehow find a way to help them do it, because they really do want to. They just don't know how they're going to make it happen.
What great advice. That's awesome. I know I had a guest on a while back, and she was remembering when she was a young mom and she had like twin boys, and she would just cry just to get away, to go get a Starbucks and just relax. Mm-hmm. And she says, oh, I would just wish that somebody would come by. And you know, sometimes we just need to be bold and ask. You know, it's kind of like if girls can ask boys out on dates today, certainly a caregiver can be bold enough to pick up the phone and ask some family and friends if they could come over Tuesday at 3:00 for 30 minutes while I go to the store, or while I go get a massage, or while I go get my nails done, or whatever. You know, just be bold. The worst thing they can say is no, and they say, okay, well, what day is good for you? You know, don't let them off the hook so easy.
Yes, one of the things that I did learn, and I have blogged about it, is fine is not an answer. If somebody asks you how things are or how you are, do not say fine. Tell them you're tired. Tell them you cry and pray and wonder how you're going to get through it the next day. Admit that you get angry sometimes. I am guilty of all of that. You know, I'm guilty of saying I'm fine. When somebody said, you know, I would love to, let me know if you need help. Didn't think to answer the phone and say, I need you right now or I need you tomorrow because I need to go over to the church and pray so I can do this again another day. That's one of the things that I really, really, truly try to express to caregivers now when I'm speaking to them is don't be afraid, as you said, ask, be vulnerable, let people know. People automatically will say, what can I do? You know, I'd be happy to help. But they don't know what you need. We need to let them know what we need.
Yes, you know, this can either make you better or bitter. And, you know, if you're a very timid person who doesn't like to ask anyone for favors, you need to get over that and become a little bolder for your self-preservation. And that will make you better, because if you don't do that, you're just going to become bitter. You're going to have resentment. It's just going to eat you alive like cancer eating your bones up. And you will become sicker than the person you're caring for, and that's a fact.
Well, I suffered a number of those caregiver burnout symptoms. There were I had migraine headaches. I had panic attacks towards the end. The stress level had reached the point where my hair was falling out.
Wow.
And I clung to the fact that I was the one that could do this.
Wow. So caregiving can be as devastating as chemotherapy where your hair falls out. That's
fortunately, everything is back the way it should be. you know, and I'm absolutely healthy again. But as many caregivers know, there comes a time when you have to be constantly vigilant, and that's a very difficult thing to do. I actually had a baby monitor attached to a small television screen that I could carry around, and so I was watching him 24 hours a day. I wake up in the middle of the night, what's he doing? You know, is he trying to climb out of bed? Is he going to fall? That kind of thing.
Did you ever get over that 24-hour surveillance thing?
At that particular time, it was necessary, but my husband and I were sharing that duty, you know, sometimes going in and sleeping in, because he actually went from, you know, in my care to in-home hospice care and, you know, nurses on call and that kind of thing. He always said he wanted to die at home, and we wanted to make that happen, so.
Why is it so hard for caregivers to ask for help? And why is it so hard? Because I actually heard caregivers, friends of caregivers, come and say, is there anything I can do? And some caregivers actually say, oh, no, it's okay. I've got it under control, when they're really falling apart. Because maybe their perfectionistic way of thinking says, oh, they could never do it as well as I could. Oh, you know, Roger would never allow someone else to come in here and feed him. You know, and so tell me the thought process that goes on behind actually turning down help that is offered.
I do believe that part of it is, at least in my particular instance, it was so complicated and there were so many medications to be administered on a certain schedule and in a certain way. And the fact that I knew that he would manipulate other people, I came to believe incorrectly that nobody could do it but me, because I was the only one that knew. And it wasn't until I was able to give that up and, yes, left list, this is what needs to be done here and there, that I realized that I could let go of those reins a little bit. And it's insidious almost, because when they first come into your care, it's not that intense. And then day by day or month by month, things become more and more complicated and more creativity is involved in dealing with it to the point that you feel like you're the only one that has all the facts.
Wow.
And I think yes. that I truly do think that's what's behind it. It was the first time my father-in-law was admitted into respite care my husband and I could take a week off. I was absolutely panicked.
Really?
About what was going to happen to him.
So you couldn't even relax and enjoy yourself.
Well, after the first day and I didn't get any emergency calls, and then the second day and I thought, okay, I can do this, now I can sleep, now that I can rest. And eventually I came to realize how important respite care is. And dealing with the VA hospital at that time, we were entitled to 30 days of respite care a year, no more than 2 weeks, no more than 14 days in succession. So if I needed a weekend to recoup, and if they had a bed in the hospital, I could admit him to the hospital, and they knew him, they knew his records. But even that was imperfect, because when he had developed dysphagia and he had severe swallowing problems and he had to have thickened liquids and pureed foods, mm-hmm. hospital workers would automatically go in and set a glass of ice water in a straw on his table, and he would drink it and he would aspirate, which would put him at jeopardy for pneumonia. So even then, I did it knowing I would have to deal with the consequences afterwards, but it becomes obvious that you just can't do everything yourself, especially as imperfect as I am.
Well, I'm glad that you finally came around in your way of thinking. I mean, are you a religious lady? I mean, you believe in God?
I absolutely do, and I have to tell you, I felt his presence more than once through this. There was one day, well, several days in a row, and I kept going around and saying, why is this so hard? Dear God, please tell me, why is it so hard to do good work? I don't understand this. And my husband and I went to church, and the priest got up to speak to us after the gospel, and he said, you know, I've been hearing from people a lot, why is life so hard? And I got goosebumps on my arms, you know? He said, nobody told you it was supposed to be easy. And you have to understand that doing good work is rarely easy. But understand this, you're earning your place in heaven when you do these things that are hard. So I don't know if I necessarily believed that I was any less imperfect at that moment, but I did have something. You know, my husband would come through the door after work, and I'd say, well, I earned my place in heaven today. And I had another instance where he was getting worse and worse, and it was becoming more difficult, and I just kept saying, dear God, I need help. Please send help. Any way you see fit, please send help. And he ended up being admitted to the hospital again with an aspiration pneumonia. And I walked down to his room, and there was a social worker standing there. And she said, Mrs. Carducci, do you need help? And I just looked up, you know, toward heaven and said, thank you, you heard me. And that's when they started giving us 14 hours a week in respite care.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I actually have never heard that. And so if I've never heard it, the caregiver's caregiver, maybe there are a bunch of people out there who don't realize that there are ways to actually get respite, especially if he's a veteran, right? Now, what if they're not a veteran?
Yeah.
Do other hospitals or insurance companies have things like this that will actually take them?
I don't know, other than the VA hospitals. I do believe that there are organizations where you can go to get respite. I would check with my insurance company, because things are changing
awesome.
In the caregiver world. It's more and more recognition of the, you know, Alzheimer's
thank
and
God.
Dementias. And there are even some states where a family caregiver can get some financial assistance, because very mm-hmm. often we do as I did, and we leave our jobs to take care
right.
of our family members.
Right. And if we put him in a nursing home, then the government or Social Security would have to pay. And there are programs where they will actually pay you to be the caregiver, Social Security will. So there's lots of things that you need to look into on the federal and the state level as well. And
you also need to be rather forceful, because there was a time when I truly did need respite care, and I tried to admit him to the hospital, and they kept saying that they didn't have any beds. I said, okay, we've got two choices here. I will call my congressperson and let them know that you have 100% service-related disability rating on this veteran, and you're refusing to take him into care, or I can admit him to the hospital full-time, because without this, I can't do this anymore. Well, 2 days later, they had a bed.
Wow. So the squeaky wheel gets the oil.
I am sure that the nurses and the doctors at the hospital that we were dealing with had notations, watch out for this woman, because I was a fierce advocate for him a number of times.
And that's not your nature typically, is it? I mean, did you
no,
learn to become
not.
That person? So see, there's hope for all of you people who are the wrong temperament to be a caregiver, that you can actually change, because it's survival of the fittest.
Well, it's like being a mama bear, I think. you know, I'm generally a very quiet, introverted person. I express myself best on paper. But when you're dealing with my family, and, you know, as I said to I called a meeting with all of his doctors and the patient advocate one day, and I said, you have hundreds of patients to care for. I have one, and I will do whatever I need to do to make sure he gets the best possible care that you can provide.
Wow.
I said, I don't want you to call me the screaming Carducci's, but that's what I'll do if I have to.
That would be a good
but
reality,
usually screaming doesn't help. What you want to be able to do is reason with them and show them that you are educated about what's going on with the person in their care. And sometimes in a very complicated case, and a lot of them are, they're not reading the full chart. People who were dealing with his mental illness didn't necessarily pay attention to his physical illness and vice versa. And what I had to do was get them all working together.
For sure. You know, I learned an important lesson when I was dealing with my mother and my wife during those critical times, that, you know, I actually lived at the hospital for 6 weeks while she was having her being treated for her stroke. And I mean, I rarely went home, but it finally occurred to me that, you know, we're Christians and we trust God in every aspect of our lives. And, you know, we trust God with our life, and we need to also trust him with our death. And if I need a break and I go away, you know, either God's going to watch over her to make sure that nothing happens, or it's her time to go, and I'm not going to live for the rest of my life in guilt. Oh my God, I shouldn't have taken that day off because that was the day she died or something like that. It's, you know, you have to just give yourself a break and realize that life and death is not in your hands. It's in God's hands. You ever came to that conclusion?
Yep. And I certainly understand that moving into the hospital, there was during the time when my mother was ill, when she was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and she and most of my family live in Florida. I had actually taken a leave of absence from my job and moved into her hospital room with her, with the idea that I would stay on the leave of absence until once they released her, so she didn't go into a nursing home, and stay with her until she was either better or she had passed away. So I did that. And the doctors at the VA hospital, when I was dealing with Roger, one of them went by the room one day and she said, do you ever leave? We lived 40 miles away from that hospital, but when he was in there, I was there every day, again, right, to make sure that he wasn't given ice water that could make him choke, or, you know, just make sure that his saying he didn't need help when he did was paid attention to. So it was easier to have him home, but I like what you said about put it in the hands of God, because sometimes they won't let go. They won't go to God while you're there. They feel like they have to stay alive for you. And by taking that step away, you allow them to do what they need to do.
Yeah. You know, nobody wants to be a burden to their children or anything like that. I know I certainly wouldn't. I saw this movie a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember the name of it, but it was about a woman who had Alzheimer's. And she had, while she was still good, she made a video of herself to herself. I think her name was Alice, if I'm not mistaken. She says, Alice, obviously, if you're seeing this video, you know, it's because you can't do your exercises anymore in the computer. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go upstairs in the back drawer. There's a bottle with 50 pills in it. I want you to take all of the pills, drink lots of water, and then just lay down. And, you know, she couldn't even do that simple task because her Alzheimer's had gone to a point. But she, in the movie, she had the pill bottle and she was about to down them when somebody came inside and she was startled and all the pills fell all over the floor. So obviously that didn't happen. But I mean, some people will go to amazing lengths to not be a burden to their children. And so it's a very interesting situation. And no two things are the same. Every situation is different. But really, a person's life is in God's hands. And now I heard on the news today that this woman in California moved to Oregon because they have right to die laws there, and California, I guess, is going to put it on the ballot. So this, we're going to see more and more of this. Do we have the right to die? Do we have the right to say when we've had enough of all of this? So it's going to be very interesting.
I had a very special moment with Roger when he was close to death. Like I said, he was in home hospice, and we had a hospice nurse. It was very clear it was going to be soon. And he looked up at the corner of the room by the ceiling, and he said, "Oh, look, I see the mist. You go first." And
wow.
I thought, you know, he trusts me to such a degree that he wants me to check out heaven for him. I just, you know, I held his hand and I said, "I think I'm going to stay here with Mike for a while, but if you need to go, it's okay." And he passed early the next morning.
Now, this seems like the logical question. If it's so hard, and it is, why do we do it?
Well, I truly believe it's a gift. It's not an easy gift. It's like every night before I go to sleep, when I say my prayers, one of the last things I say is, "Show me the road you want me to take." And frequently that road is long and bumpy, but I get where I need to be. And I had such amazing moments with my father-in-law during the 7 years that I spent caring for him. Those moments of clarity that you speak of, when he would talk about his life in Italy as a young man, you know, making skis to ski down the mountains, and very interesting stories about life on the farm and dancing the tango in the kitchen on a Saturday night. You know, I would not have missed that for anything in the world. And it's also it's a blessing and a gift to be with someone in their last moments. I believe that with, you know, when I talk to hospice nurses and people that deal with end of life, they all seem to feel the same way. It's a very precious gift to be with somebody at that point. And again, not everyone can do it. When we were close to it, I asked my husband, I said, "Do you want to be there when your father passes?" And he said, "No, I don't think I can." I said, "Well, I will be there because I don't want him to be alone." But when the time came, he was there. He was holding his father's hand, and I was on the other side of the bed holding him as well. But it's a precious moment, and it's something that we're all going to have to face, and hopefully we can face it with somebody that loves us at our side.
Awesome. I can't believe how fast this time is going. We have another break, and so we will be back. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we're back with Bobby Carducci, the the author of, what's the name of your book?
The Imperfect Caregiver, or Confessions of an Imperfect Caregiver.
I couldn't remember the confessions part. The Confessions of an Imperfect Caregiver. Well, I can't believe how fast this hour is going. We've got about 8 minutes to go, so let me see if I can get the rest of my questions in. What can caregivers say to help others understand their situation, to help avoid that isolation thing, and not like they've got the plague or something, you know?
I would like to think that we can convince them when they decide to take this on that they will sit down with people, their relatives, close friends, and develop a plan.
You mean right away, this happens,
absolutely.
Have a family meeting.
Yes, this person's going to make dinner once a week or once a month, and this person's going to cut the grass, so I don't have to worry about it.
And if you're not the organizer in the family, find someone who is to, you know, put it down in, on paper, a big chart on the wall, here's what you do, et cetera. Excellent idea.
And the other thing that caregivers need to do is reach out to other caregivers.
Like support groups.
Yes, and listen to your blog posts and, you know, go on your website and find as many resources as you possibly can. If you have someone in your home like I did, Roger was extremely introverted with his dementia and his schizophrenia. He didn't trust other people, so it wasn't that I could take him over to the local senior center and, you know, have him spend some time there. He just absolutely would be more than he could handle. But get people to come in. He enjoyed visitors when they came, maybe
really?
Only for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. There were days when he would talk to people for a couple hours, and then there were other days when he would just say, hi, how's everybody? I don't have time for this, and go and close the door to his room. You just had to go where they are at the moment. I'm sure he enjoyed seeing the faces other than mine as well.
He had no friends at this point? Some old friends?
No, and going back years in his medical records, it said he was extremely isolated. The only social activity he had was with his immediate family. Mm. He just did not connect with other people. He didn't know how. He really didn't. It was very sad. Now, one thing he did enjoy was music, though, and especially he liked opera, and when we would play that, then it would remind him of his days in Italy. He would perk up for a while.
How long
so
could
I
you listen
kinda
to
lived
it
to,
for?
It depended on the day. And sometimes, you know, he'd start talking about memories that it would bring back to him, and we'd turn the music off to listen to him, and he'd say, why do you turn that off? Turn that back on. I want to hear some more.
So,
like anything else dealing with people like this, it changed from moment to moment. You just go with whatever's there.
And I think I know the answer to this question, but you've spent 7 years as a caregiver. Would you do it again?
I would absolutely do it again. Like I said, I was in the process of doing it for my mom. And during the time that Roger was with us, my dad became quite ill, and we were encouraging him to come and live with us. Now, as long as Roger was alive, he refused. He said, you know, I'm not going to put you in a position where you're caring for two old men. I'm just not going to do that. And then after Roger did pass, and Dad was clearly in need of help, and he was living in Florida with my stepbrother, he had said, I want my last days to be with you. And we were making plans to bring him in, and he passed away. So I think God said, Bobby, you've had enough for a while. We're not going to ask of you yet, but I absolutely would. I think it's something that it's a gift from God for me to be able to step up and do this for people that need it. I also tell people I'm setting an example for my children.
And did you feel guilt when your father died? Were you tempted to feel guilty that you could have done more?
Well, I thought, why am I here taking care of my father-in-law and not taking care of my father? This is not, there's something with this.
Right.
But then I realized my father-in-law needed me more than my father did at that time. And things worked out the way they were supposed to. If my dad had wanted to come here, he would have. He just found reason after reason not to leave his beloved Florida. And so it worked out, like you said, put it in God's hands. It worked out the way that it was supposed to.
Well, Bobby, we've had an amazing interview. Thank you so much for coming on. Let everyone know a last thought that you might have to share with them, a golden gem, a nugget, and then how they can get a hold of you if they want to know more about you or read your blog or read your book or whatever.
Well, if there's a gem out there, it's for caregivers. Be kind to yourself. Do not expect perfection from you or the person in your care. And sometimes being a little bit crazy is exactly what's needed in the moment.
Really?
I say that, I don't know if we have time for this or not, but there was a point in time when I was driving him home from the hospital and he wouldn't keep his seatbelt on, and I was afraid he was going to jump out of the car. So every time he would open the seatbelt, I'd pull over to the side of the road until he put it back on. And at one point, he dug in and he wasn't going to do it. So I turned on the radio and I started to sing, and I sing really bad. And after listening to that for a few minutes, he said, stop singing. And I said, well, put your seatbelt on. And so he did, and I pulled out into traffic, and he looked over at me. He says, you're a little bit crazy, you know that? And I said, yeah, I do, but I sing really well, don't I? And he said, no, you don't. But he never took his seatbelt off again. So that's why I tell people sometimes being a little bit crazy is what you need in the moment.
So how can someone get a hold of you?
Well, my website is very simple. It's bobbycarducci.com. And my blog, The Imperfect Caregiver, is theimperfectcaregiver.com. Simple and sweet. I try to blog daily. Sometimes I don't always make it. I do several times a month. And again, I'm here for the caregivers.
Awesome. Well, you have a
wonderful
ministry.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you again for allowing me to interview you, and thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday, live at noon Pacific time. And don't forget that all our shows are recorded podcasts, so you can listen on the same link any time of the day or night, 24/7. They're also on our website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, and the shortcut, CaregiversCaregiver.com. And you can get iTunes from my website's radio show tab as well. And just a reminder, when you're on my show, please don't forget to take the quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? So you can assess where you are in the burnout process and get your free copy of my book. So until next time, may God richly bless you, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.